is no sign of your intelligence to confirm that all religions are going up the same mountain. You have to deny the fundamental teachings of the religions of the world to come to that conclusion.
Craig Parton, author of the Issues Etc. Book of the Month, Religion on Trial, Cross-Examining Religious Truth Claims.
They may all be wrong, but do any of them ask to be tested by the canons of evidence used in the law, science, and history?
Learn more about Religion on Trial at issuesetc.org. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We talked a little bit about the jurisprudence angle of Anthony Kennedy's retirement from the U.S. Supreme Court. We're going to turn to the political angle. That's what has people, I don't know, running around like chickens with their heads cut off, not only in Washington, D.C., but it appears all over the country. Joining us to talk about the political ramifications of Justice Anthony Kennedy's retirement, Mark Hemingway, senior writer for the Weekly Standard and a regular guest. Mark, welcome back.
Always glad to be back.
Well, I spoke with Terry Mattingly yesterday, and he said that he had heard rumors that inside the Beltway, people were running out to buy eggs, milk, and bread. Is it as hysterical there after Anthony Kennedy's announcement as it sounds?
I mean, certainly within the professional political class on the left, I mean, yes, there's just absolute pandemonium and horror over the situation they found themselves in. So, yeah, it's not entirely inaccurate.
Can you explain to me why it seems as though people were caught flat-footed on this? There were rumors about his retirement for a long time, and when it was announced, it seemed as though people didn't believe he could retire or that he ever would.
Well, but this isn't just about Kennedy's retirement. I mean, this is about the fact that Republicans won the presidency. I mean, you know, polls routinely showed that one of the biggest concerns for Republican voters was the future fate of the Supreme Court. Polls on the left did not show that same concern about the judiciary at all. And in fact, I think that they just took everything for granted in terms of, well, of course, we're going to have a Democratic president. Hillary's obviously going to win, and we won't have to worry about this stuff, which is, you know, why they let Mitch McConnell get away with the, you know, stalling the vote for a year and didn't, you know, make any sort of big political stink about it at all. And now they find themselves in this crazy position where, you know, Trump is replacing not one but two justices. But if you looked at the, if you understand basic, you know, political dynamics, the odds a Republican president was going to win, you know, given the election fundamentals, was never so, you know, minuscule that you should have discounted it. And, you know, secondarily, you know, look at the ages of the people in the Supreme Court. You know, it's entirely possible. I believe Breyer and Ginsburg are, you know, quite old as well. I mean, it's entirely possible that Trump could replace up to, you know, three or four justices. You know, they should have been thinking about this, and the fact they didn't is why they're scared now.
So how did we get to the point where a Supreme Court justice retirement can cause so much uproar? Aside from the Trump issue, how do we get to this point?
Well, that's a very good question, and the answer is that, you know, the government has gotten so large, I think, that a lot of fundamental questions keep coming down the pike and getting dumped before the Supreme Court, because at the state and local and, you know, federal district level, there are a lot of activist liberal justices who are constantly trying to do, you know, things that are well beyond the scope of their power, or they're enabling bureaucrats and state politicians who are trying to do things that are sort of an abridgment of basic rights. We saw a bit of this in the decision that recently came down where they upheld Trump's travel ban, where there in Justice Thomas's, I forget whether he wrote the opinion or whether it was merely a consent, but he said specifically that there was a problem with federal district judges, you know, imposing nationwide orders that shut down, you know, laws and things duly enacted by the president, you know, sort of on a whim. And if this practice continues, that they were going to have to look at its legality, because it's become so common for, you know, the federal district judges to just decide that they can set the law of the land until it's appealed all the way to the Supreme Court. And I mean, I think that people are both rightly terrified and or if you're, you know, on the left, you know, taking for granted the fact that there's this activist liberal judiciary that thinks that they can, you know, rule by decree.
Are the progressives about to flip-flop on that issue and become opponents of judicial activism and legislating from the bench?
Well, we've already seen a lot of this. You know, a lot of the issues that conservatives are usually pretty principled on, or I should say relatively more principled on these days, things like 10th Amendment issues and, you know, originalist intent in terms of how you apply the law. Certainly when it's convenient for as a break on power, as a constitutional safeguard, checks and balances, all these things that the left normally hates as obstacles to power, they do start talking about, of course, now that they're out of power, and we're seeing a bit of that now. But it is, you know, to the extent that everyone's insincere in politics, I think people on the left are more insincere about those issues.
Probably what has everyone on both sides of the aisle a little sweaty nowadays in Washington, D.C., is what the implications for this retirement will have on the midterm elections. How would you characterize that?
Well, you know, it's really hard to say. I mean, obviously already the hardcore activist left were really fired up, and, you know, we've seen them sort of flexing their muscle at the ballot box. On the other hand, you know, the polling doesn't necessarily show a big blue wave that everyone was expecting just yet. I mean, it may happen. Certainly, midterm elections for unpopular presidents tend not to go well for the party in power. But so far, the polling isn't as dire as Republicans would expect, and as far as this issue particularly goes, it's very hard to say because, you know, as we've seen all along, that like one of the number one reasons people voted for Trump was they thought that the balance of power in the Supreme Court was extremely important, and the fact that Trump is delivering on this in a big way might well end up being more motivating to conservatives and Republicans to get out and vote than liberals anticipate. Having said that, there's certainly a core group among the activist left that regards certain issues like the Supreme Court recent ruling where they struck down mandatory union fees for public employees. There's certainly a big part of the left that's union, and then there's certainly a big part of the left that is basically regards abortion and birth control as a sacrament. So they are very animated to make sure that we don't ever get into a position where the conservatives have enough power in the Supreme Court that they could, you know, start peeling back abortion legislation.
Is there a real possibility that through some machination, the Democratic minority in the Senate could somehow block a nominee before or block the actual process itself before the midterms?
I have a hard time imagining how that's going to happen. On the other hand, the Republicans have a very bare majority in the Senate, so it wouldn't take too many Republican defections. Basically, one or two would be all that would matter. You could say Susan Collins of Maine or something like that, or one of the liberal Republicans, to, you know, walk away from the table, and, you know, it could really throw a wrench in the works. On the other hand, there's a number of Democrats. I think there's something like 10 states where there are Democrats running for re-election in the Senate in states that voted for Trump. And a number of those have previously voted for Republican justices to confirm them when the rest of the party has been sort of balking at more conservative justices. So there's going to be a lot of pressure on people like Heitkamp in North Dakota and Joe Manchin in West Virginia to, you know, vote for whoever the Republicans put up.
Mark Hemingway is our guest. He's senior writer for the Weekly Standard. We'll be talking with him for a few more minutes on the other side of the break, getting his thoughts on possible successors to Anthony Kennedy. We're talking about the political ramifications of Justice Anthony Kennedy's retirement on this Friday afternoon, June the 29th. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. Right now, many churches are planning their budgets for the next fiscal year. You can promote your confessional Lutheran church and support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by joining our congregational sponsorship program, the Issues Etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to include $1,000 in their mission or advertising budgets. You'll find an informational flyer on the support page at issuesetc.org. Don't miss your congregation's budget deadline. The Issues Etc. 300.
Whether you're a man yourself or a woman who cares about the men in your life, you won't want to miss the June issue of The Lutheran Witness. Join John Kleinig, Hans Feeney, Jeffrey Hemmer, Broer Erickson, and others in this power-packed issue on men at church as they explore toxic masculinity, godly fatherhood, the religious gender gap, and more. Subscribe today at cph.org/witness. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran Christian perspective.
Solid. Serious. Substantive. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
I'm delighted to be chairman of Preach the Word Project, a project of our Synod to strengthen the preaching of all of us pastors in the Synod. We know how eternally important that is.
Issues, Etc. regular guest Dr. Carl Fekencher talking about the new Preach the Word Project.
So we've put together a program of 12 modules that will be coming out this year and over the next 3 years on a variety of preaching topics for pastors to do together with two other pastors, two guys they trust, two guys they feel comfortable with, written materials and very fine video quality materials that are now becoming available.
Preach the Word helps pastors work together to improve their preaching with several resources and by interacting with seminary professors and fellow preachers. Find out more at lcms.org/preachtheword. lcms.org/preachtheword. Preaching is challenging business. We all can use some fresh ideas. lcms.org/preachtheword.
The Me Too movement is a cry of pain by women who are tired of being mistreated by men who have been given way too much permission by the sexual revolution to just behave in any old-fashioned toward women.
He was not an originalist, that's for sure. He didn't interpret the Constitution by reference to the original understanding of those who ratified the Constitution. He was not a textualist. He would read things into the Constitution. He would read things out of the Constitution.
Real love is the doing of God's law. And sometimes societies don't always view God's law as an expression of love.
Our good shepherd will not abandon us, and even if we lose every other memory we have, our good shepherd will still cling to us. And so even if we have forgotten every other voice in this world, we will still remember the voice of our shepherd.
That is a taste of the four sound bites we'll be playing for you in their entirety in the last half hour of Issues, Etc. When we play Issues, Etc. Soundbite of the Week, it'll be your opportunity to win the LPR bundle package, and I Have Issues t-shirt, and Issues, Etc. travel mug, pen, bumper sticker, and notepad. It goes to the listener with the best vote for Issues, Etc. Soundbite of the Week. Mark Hemingway is our guest, senior writer for the Weekly Standard. We are talking about the political ramifications of Justice Anthony Kennedy's retirement. What are your thoughts on possible successors to Kennedy's seat?
Well, this is a lot to unpack at the moment, but basically the answer here is there are five people being talked about, plus a dark horse, I should say. The first one is a woman named Amy Coney Barrett. She's a professor at Notre Dame Law and a graduate of Notre Dame. She is only 46 years old. She was recently confirmed to the bench by the Senate by a vote of 55-43, and she got the votes of three different Democratic senators, including Joe Donnelly in Indiana, Joe Manchin in West Virginia, and Tim Kaine. So it would be very hard for them to have just recently voted for her for a federal post and then say that they can't vote for her on the Supreme Court without looking like hypocrites. Further, Barrett, as you might remember, her nomination was somewhat controversial because that was when Dianne Feinstein basically called her out for being Catholic. I'm sure you must have discussed that whole "the dogma lives loudly within you," minor controversy at the time. I mean, it was basically naked religious bias by the Democrats, and the fact that this would be, you know, brought back up would not reflect well on the Democrats, and it seems like the kind of controversy that Donald Trump would probably like to lean into. The next guy is a guy named Thomas Hardiman, who was allegedly the runner-up to Neil Gorsuch when they went through the last round and chose Neil Gorsuch. And, you know, he's been on the Court of Appeals since 2007 and was previously confirmed by a 95-0 vote by the Senate. So he's definitely in the mix. And then there's Brett Kavanaugh. I think he's 51. He is a conservative, he served on the D.C. Court of Appeals since 2006, and supposedly Don McGahn, the president's counsel, has been pushing Kavanaugh. For some reason, there's a whisper campaign going on that people are saying that Kavanaugh might be an unreliable conservative once on the Supreme Court, but I've also seen a lot of legal analysts on the right that I trust push back against that hard and say Kavanaugh is a solid conservative, wouldn't be a problem. Then there's a guy named Raymond Kethledge. Kethledge is interesting because he's on the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals, but he previously clerked for Justice Kennedy. So I've heard some talk that one reason, one thing that may have prompted Kennedy's retirement is that, you know, he might have struck some sort of deal, and the fact that Kethledge, you know, used to clerk for Kennedy might mean that Kennedy leaned a little extra hard on you know, getting his name up there for consideration. And then finally, there is Amul Thapar. He's 49 years old. He's a former protege of Mitch McConnell, the current Senate Majority Leader. So, you know, obviously that's a big plus in his department. He's also on the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals. And he, you know, would be the first Indian American on the Supreme Court. So, and then finally, the last guy we need to talk about is Senator Mike Lee. Mike Lee has, you know, written all manner of books on constitutionalism. He is respected by all his colleagues in the Senate for his knowledge on these things, and there's absolutely no question he's conservative. You know, he hails from Utah, so if you pulled him out of the Senate, there's very little doubt you'd get a very conservative senator to replace him, and it would, again, be very hard for senators to vote against their colleagues. I've seen Lee do a little bit of open campaigning for the post, too. He was on Shannon Bream's show on Fox News the other night talking about it. He's been giving a pat answer if he wouldn't say no if he was asked to be on it, but those are the six contenders, I would say, at the moment.
With only 30 seconds, how much cachet would a really good conservative pick by the president in 2020 with social conservatives?
Oh, I mean, it'd be huge. I mean, you know, evangelicals were told that they could not vote for Trump for all these other reasons, and the pat response was always, yes, but the Supreme Court, yes, but we might have a chance to overturn Roe and fix all these other problems of the Supreme Court, you know, acting out in a liberal manner. It's very going to be very hard for people to say, to dismiss voting for the president based on the effect it has on the court after this, after he appoints a second justice, for sure.
Mark Hemingway is senior writer for the Weekly Standard. He is a regular guest here on Issues, etc. You can read his columns under the Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org. And you can watch Mark and his wife, Molly Hemingway, Sunday on Fox News Media Buzz. Mark, thank you very much for being our guest.
Glad to be here.
When we come back, it's hour two of Issues, etc. We're going to spend some time talking about apostles, Peter and Paul. They're associated with one another, although they do occupy two kind of different time frames in the book of Acts. They do overlap a little bit, but there's no doubt about it. Peter comes first, and then Paul somewhat later. The church remembers Peter and Paul on June the 29th, and Pastor Timothy Sternberg, professor of religion for the Concordia University Education Network, will be our guest to remember Peter and Paul with us in hour two of Issues, Etc. Then we're going to play Issues, Etc. Soundbite of the Week in the last half hour. Four soundbites to play for you from Mona Charon, Robert George, Andrew Steinman, and Hans Feeney. You get to pick the winner in the last half hour of Issues, Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues, Etc. Issues, Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues, Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues, Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.